for this meeting.
So one of the things I just wanted to cover was a question that within the past few weeks, the media and also some of our residents have been asking is, our department fully staffed? How are we doing with staffing? How are we doing with recruiting? How are we doing with retention? Great news across all fronts. We are fully staffed. We have 30 officers on the books, 29 that have the ability to work the street right now, and one officer that's currently attending the Chicago Police Academy. With that, recruiting, we have an active list that's maintained by our Board and Fire Police Commissioners. And retention is part of an ongoing process that we work with the village's management team to look at ways to really enhance the lives of not just the police officers, but they're looking at things from the organization as a whole. And that's part of an ongoing process. So for everyone that's concerned because they're hearing the staffing issues in other communities or some of the cities, we do not share those problems. And we have a great group of officers here that work and serve the residents of River Forest. This evening, we're going to hear from retired Naperville Detective Rich Wasacki, who's going to cover internet crimes against children, the ICAC Task Force, and also Be Sure Consulting. Also after that, we're going to hear from Lynn Wilder-Dean from the Work Group for the Positive Youth Development, and she is the Communities Project Coordinator. We're also going to hear tonight from our Crime Prevention Officer, Megan Drake, who's going to cover a lot of the key services that the police department offers for free. And we're going to hear, too, from Detective Denise Zermeno, who's going to go through a few crime trends and statistics and what she's sort of seen coming out of our detective unit. And once again, any questions that do come in from Zoom or from our live audience, we will not leave until we answer all questions that have been raised this evening. So at this time, I'd like to bring on Rich Wasacki. Is Rich up on the screen yet?
I am up on the screen, I think.
Thank you, Rich. And as we work through some technical difficulties, the floor is yours, sir.
Great, fantastic. Were there slides of mine that you guys are going to show?
No, not this evening.
Okay, sounds good. Good evening, everyone. My name is Rich Wasacki, and I've been a police officer for 30 years. I spent 2.5 years with the Village of Summit PD, where I grew up. And I got tired of arresting all my friends I grew up with. So I decided to go to the land of milk and honey. And I was started in Naperville in 1990. And I did 28 years there. I spent 4.5 years in patrol. In 1995, I went into juvenile investigations. And then in 1998, we had a predator come up from Brentwood, Tennessee, all the way up to Naperville, pick up a 13-year-old at the corner of a block, picked her up, took her to a hotel. He didn't kill her, had sex with her, and let her go back home. And so she went home, told her parents, and parents came into the Naperville Police Department. And what happened was they told us that she met this person on this thing called, I don't know if you guys remember what this is, America Online. So AOL, you know, when I ask new cops if they ever heard of AOL, they're like, nope, never heard of it. So that was the start of our Internet Crimes Unit. So in 2000, the Department of Justice, Office of Juvenile Justice, Delinquency and Prevention, created something called an ICAC, I-C-A-C, stands for Internet Crimes Against Children's Task Force. So there are 6,000 ICAC members across the country. We're specially trained on how to catch predators. I myself in my career have arrested over 300 internet predators, and I started an internet crimes unit with the Will County State Attorney's Office. After our 4 years of that, we arrested 100 predators just in Will County, and then I came out of there, and I created a new program called juvenilejusticeonline.org. What happens in your schools and what happens in your communities I now train about 4,000 school resource officers. In my spare time, I write a lot of legislation. I recently passed the mandatory SRO, school resource officer, mandatory education and certification. It's very important to know that there are 30,000 school resource officers in the country, but only 6,000 of them are certified to be there. So it's really important to put out training for officers. I'm working on a legislation right now that makes it mandatory for every police officer that goes through the academy has 8 hours of cyber crime report taking training and child exploitation. It's really important that our officers are trained to know how to handle exploitation cases. Because let me give you all a stat. One internet predator, just one, can have up to 250 victims in their lifetime. 250. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, parents suffer from a deadly disease that sets their children up for failure. It's called the NMK syndrome. Anybody want to take a stab at that? Yeah, not my kid. I don't need to go to that training because my kid would never pig news of themselves. My kid would never meet with a predator. But yet, parents are not watching their kids because they hope their kid would never be involved in this. So let me show you how this works. When I teach fourth and fifth graders, now I teach about 300,000 students a year and parents. I go all over the country from Washington to Florida to New York to Texas. Actually, I'm leaving for Tennessee. I just became a deputy sheriff in Tennessee because the sheriff wants my services and his sheriff's department. So anyways, I'm back in the game. So when I teach fourth and fifth graders, how old are they? They're, you know, 11, 12, 13, 12 years old, right? Fourth and fifth graders, maybe 9, 10. So when I go to teach elementary and middle school, I ask the kids, how many of you got a Snapchat? Yeah. How many guys got Instagram? Yeah. How many guys got TikTok? Yeah. So then I said, wait a minute. You got to be 13 in order to have a social network. How could you guys be in there when you're only 10, 11 years old? Oh, you must have lied about your age. So then I asked the kids, how many of you whined and whined and whined until your parents gave in to let you have a TikTok because everybody else has one? I'll get about 10 kids raising their hands. How many of you did it? You didn't even care what your parents thought. 80% of them raised their hands. So let's face it. Our kids are not the best mathematicians in the world, right? Probably because of core math, but I digress. So what happens is, do you ever help your kids with math homework? It's crazy. So what they do is, you know what? I'm gonna get a TikTok. I don't care what my parents say. Everybody else has it. My older brother and sister has it. Why can't I have it? What's the harm? So they put in their name. They put in their email address. They put in their phone number. Oh, wait. I got to put my date of birth in. Let's see. I was born in 2013. Do I go up with my date of birth to be 13 or do I go down with my date of birth to be 13? Oh, heck with it. I don't want to figure out the math. I'll just put in 2000. That'll get me in. I had a kid last week tell me I put in 1999 just to be sure. So if they put in a date of birth of 2000, ladies and gentlemen, how old are they today? They're 23. So now I have a bunch of 9, 10, 11-year-olds running around the internet as 23-year-olds. Who do you think is going to talk to them? Adults, because they're 23. Who do you think is going to send them inappropriate pictures and videos? Adults, because your child is 23. Who do you think is going to ask your 11-year-old to take naked pictures of themselves while they're in their bedrooms at night? Adults, because they're 23. So you see, when parents don't understand, and here's the common thing here, right? No matter where I go, less than 1% of the student body's parents will show up. If I have 1,000 kids in a school, I'm lucky to get 25 parents because my kid would never do that, right? So now what do I do to train parents? We go to schools now and we live stream it. That's what I'm doing today. Like I'm in the city of Lockport. They want me to do the whole city. So we're live streaming. It's going on the cable station. They're recording it and they're putting it on their website. That's what I'm going to do here in about half hour. So we have to go to live stream because parents won't come. So that's the first reason why predators are so successful. One internet predator can have 250 victims in their lifetime. The first reason is because parents are not monitoring and they're not looking what their kids are doing on their social networks. And the biggest mistake parents makes when you allow your child to charge their devices in their rooms at night. When you allow your child to charge their devices in the rooms at night, you're sleeping. They shut the door so you can't hear them. They don't need to talk. It's typing, reading, and performing. That's how they get sextorted. Now, the second reason is why predators are so successful is because our police officers, when police officers, so when I teach cops, this is what I tell them. How many of you are working with police officers who work really, really, really hard? I mean, they work really hard in their 12-hour shift at not taking a report, right? Like they do stuff like, well, the guy that handles that lady works tomorrow when I'm not working. But here's the worst thing they do. And this happens probably 50% of the time. When your child is being sextorted, I mean, they're blackmailed for pictures, right? When the parent reports it to the police department, and if the officer is not trained on how to take a cybercrime report, and the officer doesn't know anything about child exploitation, and they were never trained, here's what happens. Oh, you want me to take that sexting or sextortion report, lady? Okay, I'll take the report. But you got to know that if I take the report, your 11-year-old is going to be charged with making child pornography. You still want the report? Yeah, I didn't think so. So then they victimize the victim twice, and now predators get away. This is the reason why predators are so successful, ladies and gentlemen. So we have to be training our parents. We have to be training our police officers. Now, I have a roll call training that I distribute all over the country, and it's 17 minutes, and it shows police officers exactly how to take a cybercrime report. I even have a cheat sheet. Your officer here has taken my class, and she knows exactly what to ask for. It's five things. So whenever there's a cybercrime, the police department, the officer responding has to ask for five things. Number one, you have to ask for screen captures of everything, the chat, the profile, what she said, what he said, everything, the pictures, the video, screen capture, screen capture, screen capture, print it out and make it a file. Number two, we need the user ID of the accounts. Now I show, in the full class, I show where the user IDs are at. In Instagram, it's the name at the top. In Facebook, it's a name in the URL. In Snapchat, it's go to the profile. It's not the headline name, it's the name underneath it. In TikTok, it's at and then the name. These are the user IDs. If I don't have a user ID, can't do the case. Okay. Number three, here's a mistake that school officials and law enforcement officers make all the time, mostly because they don't want to be bothered to take the report. Oh, you got this problem on your social network, your gaming platform? Just report it to Abuse the Social Network. They'll take care of everything for you. That is the worst advice you can give a victim. Because here's what happens. When you tell them to report it at the social network, and it's a violation of what they call terms of service, TOS, they're going to delete the account because it's a violation of their terms of service, and they'll delete it. So then let's say it happens one more time, and now they're sick of it, and they go report to the police department. Now, if the police department's been trained, right? They'll do a preservation and then they'll do a subpoena or a search warrant on the account to get the information. But if you've already deleted it, what are we going to get as a result of those subpoenas and search warrants? Absolutely nothing. So if the victim wants to report it to the police, do not have them go to the abuse section. That's the worst thing you can do. Number four, if there has been no contact of an insulting and provoking nature, okay, no contact. They didn't meet the victim for sex. They didn't do any child pornography or nothing like that. Because if they had, they don't take a statement. They have to go to someplace called the CAC. They have to go to the Child Advocacy Center, where special people, when they are sexually assaulted, they have to go there. But if that didn't happen, I need a detailed type statement as to what happened. I was in Roblox. My gamer tag was this. I was talking to gamer tag so and so. He brought me over to Discord, and we were in Discord. He then said to me, he sent me some inappropriate pictures and videos. Then he said, "You owe me one pic." And I shared a picture, and now he made a fake Instagram, and he's going to send it to everybody. Now the kid's being sextorted. So that's the fourth thing. So screen captures, get the user IDs, do not report it to abuse section. Okay. I need a detailed statement as to what happened and how it made them feel. And number five, I need everything I just told you printed out and saved in a flash drive. Not one flash drive, two flash drives, because sometimes cops lose stuff. Just saying. And so when that victim comes into your police department, they give you the printouts and they give you the flash drive. Here's all the other. That's all you need to do the case. And as long as you have those items, your officer has been through my class. We have special law enforcement portals that we communicate with the social network. It's a secure portal, and only police officers can access and ask questions to the decision makers at the social network. So in order to go into this portal, you have to have a law enforcement email. You have to be a certified police officer. And then they're going to want screen captures of the threats, of the sextortion, of the sexting, of the cyberbullying. We have to upload those. And with that information, we get a subpoena. We can find out who it is. Now, if there's a threat against the school, okay, that's a whole different thing. What allows us to get this information is something called ECPA, the Electronics Communications Privacy Act. And what ECPA says is that, okay, this was created in 1987. All right, internet companies, you have all this data on these subscribers and your users. Okay. There's going to be four different occasions where local law enforcement is going to have to access that data. Number one, preservation. So the most important part of an internet investigation is we do preservation. As soon as you get information on a case, you immediately go to the portal and do a preservation, because that saves the data for 90 days. Okay. Number two, subpoena. So subpoenas, when we get subpoenas from a grand jury or administrative subpoenas, there are eight things that we ask for. We can get subscriber information with financial data, emails, telephone numbers, IPs, devices, other accounts associated, this account, Apple ID information. We get all that stuff under a subpoena. In a search warrant, we get those eight things, plus we can get messages, videos, friends lists, IPs, geolocation, metadata, and anything else that's on the account we can get with a search warrant. Number four, if death or great bodily harm is about to happen or is happening now, we can attest and invoke something called the exigent circumstance protocol. The exigent circumstance protocol means that within a timely manner, within an hour of each system. So let's say a threat came in off of Snapchat. I'm bringing a gun to school and I planted a bomb, right? That went out. Your SRO gets it. She's going to ask for those five things we just discussed. Then she's going to, and then she's going to do the investigation of exigent circumstance. She's going to enter into the portal, the user ID. Within an hour, she's going to get phone numbers and IPs of who did it. She knows the tools. We're going to use MaxMind and a thing called ZX. And we're going to trace the phone number and the IPs. We go to Comcast, we go to AT&T, MediaCom, whatever your internet service provider is. And with another hour, we give them the IP, date and time, and time zone. And they're going to tell us who this is making the threat within 2 hours. We can stop school shootings. Last year, with the students who've taken my class, we stopped 55 acts of school violence. This year, we're up to number 19. And we're not even done with school yet. So all these swattings, all these threats to the schools, the main focus of the class is called Identifying and Intercepting School Shooters Through Leakage. Over the last 15 years, 93% of the school shooters posted online what they wanted to do before they did it. This is called leakage. And if we train our school staff, and who's the school staff? IT, social workers, deans, principals, superintendents, along with law enforcement together. I have a 3-day class that I'm teaching all over the country. The first day, school officials and law enforcement go together. School officials cannot train more than one day. So the first day is mandatory for them. But I encourage them to go the next 3 days because we have roundtables and we do actual cases. And every single time I teach this class, something happens at one of the schools and we work it as a team in the school and we solve it right in the class. So then the next 2 days is we give them case after case after case until they feel comfortable doing internet crime investigations. So the focus of identifying intercepting is to give students the mental health help they need before the shooting starts. Once we identify who the poster is, we swoop in and give them the care that they need, whether it's going to a mental hospital or locking them up in juvie and then sending them to a mental hospital or get them evaluated, whatever it takes to get them safe. The secondary mission is that we are going to execute 3 search warrants. We execute a search warrant on their home for the weapons they say they have or have access to. We do a search warrant on their social media where there is their deepest, darkest secrets. And number 3, we do a search warrant on their cell phone to see who they're collaborating with and a list of their social media. So all of these things that I just talked about, training parents, training kids, training law enforcement, is how we make our community safer and is how we make our kids safer. So without training, if you continue to think what you always thought, you're going to continue to get what you always got. And you saw in Washington today, all the heavy hitters were there, right? It really has nothing to do with them keeping kids safe. It's about training parents and telling Apple to stop obstructing parents who want to see what's in their kids' devices. That's the key player, is Apple. They are the biggest ones that are allowing kids to be victimized. I'll take any questions you may have.
I can ask it for you. We have a question here at the station. Sure. Give me 1 second.
So the rules are different in Europe, right? A lot of European countries don't have better access or more restrictions for companies to operate, don't they? Why can't we get that here?
Detective Wistocki, could you hear that?
No.
So he's asking about in other countries, European countries, their restrictions. Are they heavier on the access? Is that what you're asking? He's saying that in other countries, it's easier for them to get access because the companies are required to provide it a certain way.
Well, those countries don't have an ACLU. And they don't have freedom of speech like we have in our country. And I'll give you a perfect example. I'm trying to rewrite the cyberbullying statute in the state of Illinois. Basically, what it says now, if you make any comment, request, suggestion, or proposal that is obscene with the intent to offend, you've committed a crime of harassment through electronic communication. So if your child gets a text saying that nobody likes you in school, why don't you just go freaking kill yourself? That's not a crime in Illinois. So I, with the help of Jamie Mosser, the state's attorney in Kane County, we wrote the legislation and the ACLU knocked it down that they don't want to criminalize freedom of speech. That's the problem.
Thank you. You answered his question.
Okay.
Anyone else? All right, Detective was. So this is Detective. Do you want to introduce yourself? Sorry.
Sure, sure. So I am Rich Wistocki. I've been a police detective at the city of Naperville. I did 28 years there. I wanted to do 30, but I didn't make it. I did this thing called the TEDx. And when I did my TED talk, it went viral. And then I was being asked to teach in schools all over the country, and I found a new thing. It changed my life forever. So I retired in 2018, and then now I teach for the National Association of School Resource Officers. I teach for the National Association of School Resource all over the country. Again, I teach about 4,000. And a few months ago, I was teaching in Putnam County, Tennessee, in the Ridge Mountains, and I was teaching this identifying intercepting class, and the sheriff, Eddie Ferris, was in my class the first day. And when I was leaving, he took me out to dinner. He says, I want to have access to you 24/7. And I'm like, just call me. What am I going to say? Right. He goes, no. I want you to work on our cases. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, I want to make you a deputy sheriff. You're going to be one of my reserve deputy sheriff detectives. And when we call on you, I want you to help our guys out. I'm like, so like, you're going to make me a sheriff? He says, yes. So I'm actually going there next week to get my credentials. So I'm back in the game. And it's really great. We solved two murders. The suspects, we caught the suspects. One guy killed his 2.5-year-old, and he made it look like he jumped out of his car off a bridge to commit suicide. I tracked the social media. He was staying at a buddy's house, and they caught him. We had a murder, or actually a guy escaped from prison in Putnam County. And we geolocated to where he was, and we caught him in an Arby's. And again, through social media, the investigations are incredible. And people just don't know. They think they can be tracked through their social media, but people will always hit their social media to check in with someone. And that's how we track them. And so I'm back as Detective Wostocki, so because that's how people know me, and that's what I do.
Detective Wostocki, thank you so much for speaking with everyone tonight. We really appreciate you attending.
Anytime, anytime. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Anytime you need me or my services, just let me know. The website is besureconsulting.com, BESURE consulting.com. It shows a schedule of where I'm going to be presenting. Anytime you need any classes, I'm really big into first responder mental health and addiction. I have sent over 100 first responders to treatment for trauma and addiction over the last 5 years. And I also have a program that shows first responders how to get help without anybody knowing that they went for help. And that's the biggest thing. All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Your officer there does a great job. She's been to a couple of my classes, and she knows how to roll. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. We appreciate yours.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. We are going to welcome our next guest speaker. This is Lynn Wilder Dean. She is a Drug-Free Communities Project Coordinator and part of the work group for positive youth development, which we work with here at the River Forest Police Department. So, Lynn, I'll let you.
Oh, where's the clicker?
It's gonna.
Oh, you're gonna.
Yeah.
Okay, let me get my guy.
Let's keep pointing out the next slide. People attending to sign up. Yeah.
Can you see if there's attendees online?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Hello, everybody. I'm Lynn Wilder Dean. As Officer Drake mentioned, I am the Drug Free Communities Project Coordinator for the Oak Park and River Forest Townships Work Group for Positive Youth Development, or for shorthand as PYD. Let me start by introducing about the coalition. The Work Group for Positive Youth Development, or PYD, has supported the youth of the Oak Park and River Forest community in choosing to be healthy and drug-free since 2010. We bring multiple community sectors to the table, including parents, government agencies, substance abuse treatment organizations, and law enforcement. In 2019, PYD earned Drug-Free Communities, or DFC, federal funding. This grant is administered by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC. Talk a little bit about what PYD does. We change permissive social, community, and family norms regarding youth alcohol and substance use, specifically in Oak Park and River Forest townships, through communications campaigns. Past campaigns have included What's Your Reason and Your Influence is a Superpower. In 2022, PYD launched For Their Future. We educate parents, especially parents are our focus, by providing resources through public events and campaigns. We had a presence at Berry Fest. We do Red Ribbon Week awareness. We have a presence at Parent University, which is through Oak Park River Forest High School. We have a presence at the Oak Park Chamber of Commerce Health and Wellness Fair. We also attend Day in Our Village. So at this point, I'd like to give some information that's presented through the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, which is SAMHSA, through their Talk Their Hear You campaign, which is designed to give parents the tools they need to communicate effectively with their children on this sensitive topic. So let me start with a few quick facts you can remember. Among people 12 or older in 2020, 58.7% used tobacco, alcohol, or an illicit drug in the past month. Alcohol and other drug use during the teen years especially can interfere with normal brain development and increase the risk of developing a use disorder. And of course, injury and violence related to drug use is one of the leading causes of death for teenagers. I'd like to talk a little bit about proportions of the population regarding alcohol and substance use disorders. So here we have a lovely graphic. 47% of children who begin drinking before age 14 develop an alcohol use disorder at some point in their lives. Now let's flip that on its head. Only 9% of youth who do not drink alcohol before they're 21 will develop an alcohol use disorder in their lifetime. So that change of proportions is pretty staggering. The last presenter talked a little bit about the NMK, Not My Kid syndrome. Let's talk a little bit about reasons, and some of these are obvious and some are maybe not so obvious, why your child might start drinking or using drugs. The most basic one is stress. When children worry about things like grades, their physical appearance, and fitting in, they may start drinking or using drugs to try to escape from those problems. Now, peer pressure is a specific form of stress. Between ages 11 and 18 is when youth are most likely to be influenced by their friends and social media. And then the other specific form of stress is transitions. This is life events such as transitioning to high school or to college, a romantic breakup, moving from house to house or town to town, and familial issues such as divorce or death in the family can influence children to turn to alcohol and other drugs. Now, the next few slides are a real boiling down of the SAMHSA's Talk They Hear You campaign. The actual campaign has an hour-long presentation that I could do over in one occasion, or there's actually a three-day event that can be held on this campaign. So I urge you to go to the website, which is talktheyhearyou.com. You can also do a search for hashtag talktheyhearyou on social media to get a more in-depth presentation, some more in-depth tips. But let's do just the basics. The first and the most important one to remember is to start talking with your child early and often. It's really never too early to think about prevention. Nowadays, we're hearing talks like this at the same time that the previous speaker was talking about sextortion starting at the ages of 9 or 10. In the elementary schools, we need to be talking about this. Start talking with your children before they're exposed to alcohol and other drugs. That's why we gotta get in there as quickly as possible. Next thing to remember is to have frequent little talks instead of one big talk. Kids will remember 61-minute conversations better than they'll remember one 60-minute conversation. They'll start tuning you out. Be direct and honest in your conversations. This is a kicker statistic. A lot of people think or assume that kids believe their friends are their prime influence. Actually, around 80% of children that's under the age of 18 believe that their parents should have a say in whether or not they drink alcohol. But of course, talking about it can be difficult. So your children are listening. What will you say? Just a second. These are the five conversation goals of the Talk They Hear You campaign, and they're presented in order of logic and importance. Number one, show clear disapproval of underage drinking and other drug use. Your kids need to get a solid message about this with no equivocation. But what's important is that you show that you care about your children's health, wellness, and success, and that's the reason why you disapprove. You want to understand that you're coming at it from their side. You have their best concerns in mind. You're not doing it just arbitrarily or, you know, to be restrictive. You're doing it because drinking alcohol and using other substances directly affects health, wellness, and success. The third thing you want to do is show you're a good source of information about alcohol and other drugs. And if you want to, if anyone wants to reach out to the coalition about this, I have a list of some good, solid sources. We didn't have room to really include them on this slide, but there are sources like SAMHSA, sources like the National Institute of Health, sources like the CDC, the National Institute for Alcohol and Addictions. There are some very solid places that have information specifically related to youth. Number four, you want to show that you're paying attention and will try to keep them from drinking and using drugs. This one is really critical. A study came out recently from the University of Chicago that demonstrated that one of the prime ways that parents have that influence that I mentioned is that they are paying attention to who their children spend their time with. As soon as kids know that attention is being paid, that starts affecting who they're spending their time with, and that influences peer influence. And number five, conversations goal is to build your children's skills and strategies for avoiding alcohol and other drugs. So a key frame to this is doing role playing, acting out an offer and acting out refusal. And so the last thing I just want to mention is how to get involved with our coalition. I'd be happy to send you more information about this presentation, Talk They Hear You, anything you need. PYD is currently planning its 2024 youth substance use prevention activities for the spring season. In April, we're doing Alcohol Awareness Month. And in May and June, we're focusing a campaign called Operation Sticker Shock on the prom and graduation season. Parent community input is vital to our process. Please reach out to pyd@oakparktownship.org. And of course, we want you on our social media. And our handle on both Facebook and Instagram is PYD Coalition. That is all I have for you today. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Again, that was Lynn Wilder-Dean with the Work Group for Positive Youth Development. Thank you very much for coming tonight, Lynn. All right. Are you able to pull my slides up? Again, I am Megan Drake. I am the school resource officer in the crime prevention unit here at the River Forest Police Department. We are working on getting some PowerPoint slides up right now, but we're going to go over many of the free services that the police department here offers. Go a couple more. Okay. So thank you again to both of our speakers for taking the time out of their evenings to be a part of this meeting. Here we have, you can see a list of many of the free services that the River Forest Police Department offers, which include the Emergency ID Bracelet Program, our frontline portal access for overnight parking, vacation watches, and key holder information. The police department also provides free residential security surveys, vehicle locks for Hyundais or Kias, and child safety seat inspections, as well as many more things. During this meeting, I'm going to focus on highlighting the Emergency ID Bracelet Program, the frontline key holder portal, and the residential security surveys. Mm-hmm. The Emergency ID Bracelet Program aids first responders and healthcare professionals by providing immediate understanding of underlying medical and mental health issues. This can help with unconscious or nonverbal subjects by providing quicker access to information such as their emergency contacts, physician contacts, and residence locations. This is all done in a confidential manner, Information is collected via short application and securely stored at the police department. Each applicant is given an ID number, which you can see on the second line all the way to the right. It's RF, and then following are a few numbers. So addresses are not put on the bracelets, and the participants are able to choose what information they would like displayed. Once the application is completed, it's typically a 1 week turnaround from when that's done, and then we get the bracelets back. Program participants. They include those with underlying health problems, such as diabetes. Some may have pacemakers. We have participants with autism, dementia, severe food and drug allergies, others that are nonverbal or have delayed speech, or some people that just wanted to join. This is extremely helpful. We have had people that we've come in contact with that are nonverbal. They're unable to tell us where their home is or who we need to contact in order to get them somewhere safely. And these bracelets have really come in handy. So I have my contact information at the bottom of many of these slides. Please reach out to me if this is something that you are interested in, or if you know someone that may be interested in it. All right, so our frontline portal, this is where you can access overnight parking requests, vacation watches, as well as now we are having where you can put in key holder information. You can either use the link that's up on the screen that'll bring you directly to this page, as well as that QR code. Otherwise, this can be found through the Village of River Forest website. So you are able to do the overnight parking, vacation watches, and then the key holder information is the one that I really want to focus on this evening. If you click on that key holder portal, it'll bring you to this screen where you can select I am a resident or I am a business. For this demonstration, I selected resident. I've highlighted a few of the different aspects that you can add information to. You have the option to check a box indicating whether or not the residence or business has any type of surveillance cameras, such as a Ring doorbell. This is very helpful should you or your neighbors become victims of a crime or if there's an incident in the area that police are investigating. By selecting this, you're informing the River Forest Police Department that you're willing to provide access to your footage. Officers would be able to refer to this portal to check which residences or businesses potentially could have captured evidence on their cameras. By selecting this, you are informing the River Forest Police Department that you're willing to provide access. Key holder information, which is the next red circle. This is where you can put in any of your contact information or contact information for others that are residing in your residence or people that have access to your business. That way we are able to contact them quicker should an emergency arise. Below that, we have alarm info. This allows us to have two-way communication with your alarm company. For instance, if a patrol officer is going by your residence or business and they hear an alarm going off, blaring, but we haven't received a call yet, we could look this up, contact your alarm company to see where they are getting notifications that there's been access to your system. At the bottom, any additional comments one would like to provide the police department. This is any further information that you would like us to have. You could potentially put in descriptions of vehicles that would typically be at the residence. If you wanted to, you could put in a description of your pets. We could even use it if we find a dog in the area. We can look up different addresses and see if they match any of those descriptions. So it's really what you'd like to use of that last part. And as always, just a reminder, the Village of River Forest does not share any of your personal information. This is all securely stored in our system and just for our use. And that, again, is just the QR code that goes directly to that frontline portal. And then my contact information, it's going to be on a couple more slides as well as at the bottom. I also wanted to highlight residential security surveys. We provide these for free for residents. Please contact me to schedule one for your home. An officer, most likely myself, will gladly come by, conduct one of these surveys, come out and inspect different areas and access points of your residence to help you determine where additional security measures could be added. This is the form we use. We fill this out while we are completing the survey, and then we go over it with you afterwards, and we leave the copy with you. That way, if there are things on there that we've marked down, you can refer back to it. I know we heard earlier about cyber safety from Detective Rich Wasaki. This year, Safer Internet Day is on Tuesday, February 6th. The global theme of Safer Internet Day for this year is Together for a Better Internet. This is a great opportunity for you to start those conversations with your kids, your family members, loved ones, just about internet safety and how to keep yourself secure online. Some of the main topics that they have for Safer Internet Day include cyberbullying, scams, and online predators. There is a link there. It's https saferinternetday.us. If you access that link, it does bring you to a site where it provides you with different ways to get involved, including there's a free virtual parents night, as well as various activities and resources to use as home, such as videos, et cetera. You can go ahead. Now we will hear a word from Detective Denise Cermeno on crime trends and statistics.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Detective Denise Armeno, and I'm with the Investigations Unit with the Forest Police Department. I'm here to just talk a little bit about the crime trends that we're seeing in surrounding agencies that could potentially, you know, come in this direction, and how we are working as a department to prevent those collaboratively with our patrol units and neighboring agencies. The first one that's probably not a surprise are the motor vehicle thefts that are occurring all over the city. We do see some of those coming along the avenues that surround us, North Avenue, Harlem Avenue, Madison Avenue. Typically, they're Kias or Hyundais along other more popular makes, but those are probably the two that mostly everyone is aware of. A lot of those vehicles are being used for other crimes. And again, I'm sure you've seen all over the news, robberies happening all over the city and, you know, in some of the neighboring neighboring towns. So additionally, we are just working with other agencies and our all the technology that we have available to us, including all the license plate readers that we have locally as well as with servers that we share with surrounding agencies via a system called Block that allows us to be able to track in live time all the vehicles that get read with the license plates. And we do get alerts when they are in the area so we can proactively address them and potentially prevent some of the crimes that are occurring along our avenues and potentially end up in town. Again, being proactive and addressing those issues and the vehicles that are being monitored through the flock and the license plate readers, as well as the surveillance that we do have in our village. We have a lot of new cameras that were placed specifically in the north end of town, as well as those big avenues that I mentioned earlier. So we use all of that proactively, and then also in our investigative side to identify suspects and being able to track who's driving them, what their locations through town were, and follow their trails in and out of town. The other thing I think that we have already addressed are just, you know, we rely also a lot on our community to help us with our investigations. So what SRO Drake mentioned, all the flock technology that's coming in Frontline. That's a cool new resource that I'm excited to use for our investigations. When a crime typically occurs in our town, we are looking at neighborhood crime canvases that happen in the area. So our patrol units will go out and talk to all the neighbors, all the other surrounding businesses that are located within the vicinity of when a crime occurs. We collect any video surveillance that those houses or businesses have to offer to us. And this will make our job and your cooperation easier, as we can, you know ahead of time and anticipate who might have the video and how to contact that particular house or business so that we can obtain access to that video. Some reminders that I just wanted to address, kind of going with the crime trends that we're still seeing in the city along with the neighboring agencies. motor vehicle thefts. Make sure you're aware of your surroundings. Anytime you're at a gas station, anytime you're parking your car, making sure you're looking around before you park. If you see anything that kind of makes the hairs of the back of your neck stand up, addressing those, don't get out of the vehicle. And if you do get out, making sure you take your keys with you, taking any valuable possessions with you that could be potentially broken into, or the vehicle can be taken if, you know, you're at a gas station and you leave your keys in the car. Don't leave your car running at any point, unless, you know, your remote's starting to heat it up. But even in the winter now, people that might still have a key in their vehicle might have their vehicle running to heat it up. It's not particularly a great idea because people are seeing that. And a lot of vehicles that we see get stolen in the area was because they're delivering food or running in and out of the house, and people, particularly criminals, will know that and jump in the vehicle and it's gone before you know it. Knowing your license plate information is very important if you are a victim of that crime. Our dispatch is pretty good at identifying that information if you don't have it, but it just speeds up the process for our investigation and, you know, proactive being in the moment, being able to track down the vehicle if it's still potentially in the area. Some technology for any vehicles that are targeted. We've seen in the past that a lot of the vehicles that we are able to recover are because they have either a dealership sort of tracking system that they can access and give us. We've been able to successfully recover vehicles because the person that's the victim of the crime gives us access to their online account that, you know, allows me to track the vehicle in real time, and I'm able to send an agency to go look for the vehicle. Any OnStar, any sort of GPS monitoring that the vehicle might have. We've also seen air tags being placed in vehicles in kind of discrete areas where they cannot be removed. Those have been successful in some instances where the vehicle is still particularly in a close vicinity, and we're able to track them down fairly quickly. Dash cams have been a good help too. Some dash cams are equipped also with GPS technology. And then, as Officer Drake mentioned, we do offer the wheel locks for those types of vehicles that are like the Kias and the Hyundais with key locks that are being easily targeted because of the social media trends that are circling around the area. I will hand SRO Drake some information. Kia and Hyundai have both recently released some anti-theft deterrent upgrades for vehicles that qualify, and then some other some other modifications to engines that to vehicles that might be potential targets for these motor vehicle thefts that are occurring. Burglaries, make sure that you're locking your vehicle, your residences at night. We have also the vacation watches in the frontline system if needed, so that patrol can keep an eye on your residence if you are out of town. And that gets very specific with lighting in the house, any alarm systems, and what vehicles we should expect if your burglar alarm system gets triggered. We know what to expect when we do happen to show up, but we also proactively will keep an eye in the area and make sure that your house is safe while you are out of town or on vacation. Same thing, just make sure you're not leaving any car keys in your car if it's parked. We've seen a couple of those that have occurred in the past. Keep them locked in your driveway. No keys in the car. Just keep them somewhere where they can't be reached by someone that shouldn't have access to them. And then just another thing that's been trending was robberies. Make sure you don't have any headphones in while you're walking. Limit what you have on you if you know you're going to be out walking late at night, that sort of thing. So any questions? That was a little brief and kind of broad. Yeah, so I will forward this information. But yeah, Kia and Hyundai have both released some new press releases on anti-theft software upgrades for everybody to prevent them. Thank you.
We could probably attach it.
Is there a place I can see, like, since we don't, the reports doesn't report the water, or is there something I can see?
On the village website, monthly, there's an incident summary that's reported on the village website. So if you go on to the VRF website, you'll be able to locate incidents. Luke, do you have the exact link that they hit to access that? And you'll see the whole month's events. So within the next couple days or so, you'll see January's events posted on the website itself. And any other questions or that you have regarding any incidents or something you heard or something you saw on Facebook, reach out to us. The reporting has become more something that the residents have gotten used to, that monthly report. And of course, if it's a major or critical incident, usually that's going to be in the paper. The media is going to be running individual stories on that. Any other questions? You have the floor, sir. It is recorded, and they actually play back. It will go on the website, the village website. A lot of people watch this after it's been recorded. The speakers on the internet about the internet tonight and the positive youth development, very timely, not just what we're seeing at a national level, but especially at the local River Forest and Oak Park and Forest Park areas. These are everyday occurring issues with regard to our youth and drugs and alcohol and being extorted on the internet. And Detective Wasaki has a great reputation. We're glad he had time tonight just to share a little bit with us. Sergeant Ben Ransom actually is still active on the Cook County Attorney General's Office ICAC Task Force and still works some of these child predator cases and is our highest trained investigator. Agreed. Our next quarterly meeting, we'll have two great speakers again. Sometimes what drives the level of attendance at the meetings is if there's been a major incident, a critical incident, or something that's really scared the public. So sometimes not a big audience sort of means everyone's sort of even keel. Sometimes we'd love just for them to appear for the great guest speakers that are coming in. And we try to make it about community-based events or programs or availability. And there's a lot, as you heard Officer Drake talk about, a lot of services that we constantly remind the public. We do it for free. We're a small community. The newsletter, you'll see. They're on the website of what we offer. They're highlighted. Some of the programs are highlighted monthly, so it doesn't, sometimes if you spit out the same information, people get used to it and they sort of gloss over it and don't really look at the details. So we try to highlight some of our programs. But one thing we're always available to do, if there's a condo association, a homeowners association, a neighborhood where they have some questions or concerns, we go visit them. We go sit in someone's backyard as they're having a neighborhood gathering. We'll come by someone's house and participate in a small meeting. Sometimes people's comfort level is much better when they're sitting in someone's residence than having to come to a government complex. Sometimes we'll host our meetings over at the library or the community center, just to just make us available in other parts of the community where people just want to walk over. But we appreciate you coming tonight. And if there's anything else you want to share, I'll be more than glad to answer it. We will be more than glad to do it once we close out the meeting. I'm checking with our moderator, and there's no questions that have come in online. So once again, I want to thank everyone for coming out this evening, our guest speakers, and especially Detective Zermeno and Officer Drake for the hard work that they put into for the community here, and also the great information they supply on a regular basis. And to everyone, have a great